This interview is with Dale. No.
Douglas. Doug.
Go ahead and introduce yourself and say the date. I can edit that out.
I'm Doug Cartman from Kingsford, Michigan. Born in Ontonagon, raised in Greene.
Doug, would you like to talk to us and tell us a little bit about the early history of Greene?
Sure. Greene was founded in 1904. It really had its roots when the McMillan brothers set up a lumber company in Ontonagon. They were from Wisconsin, and shortly after the big fire in Ontonagon, they were the first really large employer that came back and provided employment to the local folks. Their sawmill was located near the Hefferly building at the end of River Street, and they had logging operations around the town, first near Wood Spur, and then later they purchased a large tract of land about 6 miles west of Ontonagon along the lake shore, and had their lumber camps in that area, and that's what became Greene. After they were done logging the area, they sold the land to farmers, or future farmers. Typically back in those days, when logging companies came through an area and took out the timber, they just let the land go back to taxes. But the McMillan brothers had the idea that they could probably bring people in and sell the land and do farming on it. So this was about 1900. They actually built the mill in 1899, 3 years after the fire, and began operation there. Timber was first brought from around Wood Spur, like I said, and then a year or two later they purchased this large tract of land near what would become Greene. The two principals in the company were Charles McMillan and his brother Benjamin, and the company underwent several corporate reorganizations and finally became the Greenwood Lumber Company, which more people are more familiar with that name, I think, than the McMillan brothers. In 1903, the McMillans sold their first land to a group of Finnish American immigrants. Seven different families that bought 80 acres of land in the Greene area.
What road would that be on now?
Well, it's along M64, okay, which at that time was called the Iron River Road. And there were no other roads in the area other than a logging road that had been just constructed or used by Robert Stevenson, prior to the fire or just after the fire. It was called the Stevenson Road that ran south near where the Greene Park is now. And the first residents, there were four different families that bought 80 acres along that road south from the lake shore. And there were three other families that purchased the property west of that area. Greene is located right where the township line is between Ontonagon Township and Carp Lake Township. So half the residents were on the Ontonagon side of the township line and half were on the Carp Lake side of the township line. And Greene has always been kind of divided that way since that time. Half the people went to school in Ontonagon Township, half the people went to school in Carp Lake Township, for instance.
Was there ever a Greene school?
Yes. Green had four different schools at different points in time. The first was built in 1904, right at the junction of the Town Line Road and M64. The building still exists there. It was called the Green School, and it was in Ontonagon Township. So it was operated by the Ontonagon Township School Boards. In 1909, I believe it was, Carp Lake Township built a school on the Halfway River Road. It was known as the Carp Lake School, and it still exists also. And it's had been used for quite a while after it was no longer used as a school, as the Township Hall. And that, when that school when they no longer held school in that building, they built a new one just south of their a two-room schoolhouse. Kind of a big deal back in those days to have two rooms in your schoolhouse. And it was at the end of the Halfway River Road where it turns, and I think it was 1953 was the last year that school operated. In fact, I was the last kindergarten class. I was a member of that class at that school. And then a little bit later on, there was another school built on the Cranberry River Road called the Cranberry School, built in the 20s, I believe. So
I have one question I wanted to go back to. Mm-hmm. Do you know the last names of the original four Finnish families?
Yeah. I have them written here, I guess. John Savela, Savela, was, I believe, closest to the highway on the Stevenson Road. Then Eberhard Steinbeck was next. Aro Savela, Savola, no relation to the John. And the fourth one on that road is Nick Hakkinen. Then on further west on M64.
Can you spell Hakkinen for me?
Sure. It's Hokkanen. That name is still relatively, I mean, there are Hakkinens in the area still. But
thank you.
That family. Then on the Carp Lake side of the township line is Fridolf Carlson, John Lane, and Antti Kirjavainen, which I'm sure you have no problem spelling, but I can spell that for you. Yeah. So those were the original seven. They settled in 1903, and post office was established in Green in 1904, from which Green gets its name. It was the Green Post Office. It was named after Thornton A. Green, who was the general manager for the McMillan Lumber Company. So Green takes its name from Thornton. And he was son-in-law of Charles McMillan.
Do you know anything about what kinds of things they were raising, or were they just subsistence farming?
It was typically they had a milk cow or livestock like pigs and chickens and that sort of thing, and raised their own produce, potatoes and typical vegetables. It was primarily, kind of subsistence for their families. I think only cash crop they probably had was like cream from the cows and that sort of thing, where they get some money. Typically, the men would work the farms in the summertime and then go work in the lumber camps in the wintertime, and the women of the house would take care of the animals and the barns and that sort of thing through the winter, and the kids go to school and so forth. Thornton Green, on the other hand, had a very large farm that he built in Green, and it was kind of a demonstration farm where he raised just all kinds of pedigree cattle and sheep, turkeys, raised produce like a watermelon and all kinds of different corn and that sort of thing. And it was all a part of his, I guess, master plan to entice people to come and buy land that was good for farming. You know, this isn't really a great farming area. but he not only sold it to the immigrant Finns, who are pretty good at grubbing out a farm to keep themselves fed and so forth from just, you know, the way they were raised in Finland. It wasn't great for large farms and that sort of thing. But he went out and peddled Green to people in Iowa, Illinois, which you think is pretty doggone good farming country, southern Wisconsin, and enticed them to come up here and begin farming in the UP. So he was a pretty good salesman.
So the original Finnish families, did they come right directly to here from the old country? Or
Normally they would come to the copper country, work in the mines for a year or two, earn enough money to buy a place of their own. So usually they were like a couple of years here, two or three, 4 years, and then purchase their properties. I was reminded that farm that Thornton Green operated in Green was called Hemlock Hill Farm. And some of the local residents still recognize that name. There's nothing left of it anymore today, but it was several hundred acres in the Cranberry River area.
Let's go back to the lumbering or logging.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of wood were they taking out? How were they getting it to the mill, which was here in town?
Yeah, it was all hemlock and hardwood forest. It was the virgin forest that was here, and it was what they call a hardwood hemlock forest stands. And originally, when they logged in the Wood Spur area, they hauled the logs to the mill here in Ontonagon via rail from Wood Spur to the mill on the river. I think that's where Wood Spur probably got its name, because they built a spur off of the Chicago Milwaukee St. Paul Railroad to load their wood onto the cars and be hauled to Ontonagon. The problem on the west side of the river, where most of their logging was done, is there was not a railroad that ran out that way. So in the first years, what they did was they cut the lumber, the trees, brought the logs down to the lakeshore, decked them there, and then let them push them into the water, into the lake, and brought them to Ontonagon by using tugs. So they used a tugboat to bring it from. The first camp was around the Potato River, then the next camp was in the Green area, and they did that sort of operation in both those areas for just a year or two. Then they built a railroad from Ontonagon out to Green along the lakeshore. It was part of the McMillan Company. McMillan Company built it, but it was a separate entity. They called it the Ontonagon Railroad, and it ran from between M64, then the Iron River Road, between there and the lake. So it ran right along the lake shore all the way out to just east of the Halfway River, and it ended there. And you can still, if you go down most of the rivers, you can still see some of the old wooden pilings or spiles of the railroad bridges in that area, and where they crossed the rivers going out to Green. And they had a lot of bridges because there were a lot of rivers between here and there that complicated building a railroad. So,
So the bridge that went across the river for the railroad, is that the existing one here, or was it another one?
And they actually built the railroad before that bridge was built. So for the first year or so, they would haul the logs to Ontonagon on the west side of the river, transfer them onto wagons or whatever, and then hauled them across the regular bridge to the mill, which was on the east side. But the Chicago Milwaukee St. Paul Railroad built that bridge right around that time frame. I forget, 1905 or 6 or something like that. So then they connected to the Chicago line, and then were able to bring the trains right into Ontonagon.
So, was there ever a church in Green area?
Yeah, the Finnish settlers, like right away, maybe 1904, 1905, formed a congregation, and it was formed at the Rudla farm, but there were most of the residents were members of the Finnish American residents were members of the church. The church was actually built, I think it was 1910, on what's now the Town Line Road, and it served the community until the 1960s, and has since been torn down. But there's a small replica of the church at the cemetery there. The cemetery was part of the Finnish Lutheran Church there as well. Now part of it's owned by the Carp Lake Township now.
And that's the Green Cemetery?
Yes.
Okay. So, what are some other things you could share about Green's history?
I guess we talk a little bit about maybe the roads that went to Green. Long before Green existed, there were copper mines in the Porcupine Mountains that had no connection to Ontonagon other than by water. So the Lafayette Mine and Cuyahoga Mine built a road from the Porkies to Ontonagon in the 1860s, early 1860s, something like that. It probably wasn't much of a road, just, you know, cut some trees down, and I think it was more of a winter road where they could cross the rivers in the wintertime with their wagons and that sort of thing. Probably not much of a road. Shortly thereafter, the state of Michigan commissioned a road to be built, to be surveyed and built between Ontonagon and the Montreal River at the state line to Wisconsin, which is, you know, quite a haul, 60 some miles or whatever it is. The road was surveyed. Daniel Beeser, who's a rather well-known Ontonagon name, was in charge of surveying the road. It was surveyed all the way to the Brule River. I think this was like 1860s, mid-60s or thereabouts. It was built as far as beyond Silver City up to like Union Bay, and then south to the Nonsuch Mine. And it was, you know, it was built to state specifications and that sort of thing. So it was a reasonably good road, and a lot of bridges were built and that sort of thing. So there was land transportation from Nonsuch Mine to Ontonagon then, beginning at that point in time. It was It was known as the Yankanagan and State Line Swampland Road. And swampland came from, that's the way the state paid for roads to be built, was by selling swamplands, and then that revenue was used to build the roads. It was known typically just as the Iron River Road, because it went from Montanagan to Iron River. Then when the silver boom happened in Iron River, the name of the town was changed to Silver City. Daniel Beezer also platted that town and was kind of the promoter of the silver mining and Silver City back in those days. And then eventually that road became what is now M64. And then the railroad also came through in 1904, the Ontonagon Railroad that I spoke of. Then the Chicago-Milwaukee line picked it up from Green, ran it across the halfway river, then south to Tallfree, where the Diamond Lumber Company had its lumber camps. So the Chicago line provided rail service to the Diamond Lumber Company from there. And then when the mine in White Pine opened, they ran that railroad up to White Pine.
So McMillan and later Green Lumber had camps, you said, at... Can you tell me the places that the camps were again?
Their first camp on the west side of the river was near the Potato River. Camp 2 was in what is now Green, just west of the town line creek. And then they had, you know, they would log that area, they'd be done, then they'd build another camp further away. There were camps south of Camp 2 in Green. There were camps along the Cranberry River. Later camp, there were probably half a dozen different camps in the Green area over time. One of the latter camps was near 10 Mile Spring, which is just west of Duck Creek. And it was a natural spring. That area is known as 10 Mile Spring area. There was a camp built there. And their last camp was built on the Big Iron River, where now, you know, there's the Bonanza Falls, or originally the Greenwood Falls, known as the Greenwood Falls. The camp was built, their last camp was built there. And they built an extension of the railroad from Green to Silver City, known as the Greenwood Line, or Greenwood Railroad.
Well, let's switch gears, unless you have more to talk about early history. Can you talk about what, and Sally, you can speak of also, what was it like? You said you were in the last kindergarten class in what was it like growing, what was a typical day like growing up in Green, summer, winter, that sort of thing? Did you come into town much? I mean, what was...
Life was more structured back then. We came into town every Friday to go grocery shopping. So it was always a Friday trip, and after my dad came home from work to drive into Ontonagon, and we'd shop at the Mass Co-op originally, and then the Heffernan's IGA was, you know, there. This building right here. So that was typically where we shopped, and also the Quality, which is now the Quality Supermarket, which is St. Vinny's now. Yeah, it was back when I was young. I mean, we didn't even have indoor plumbing. We had the outhouse. We had water that came into the house. We just didn't have a bathroom. Saturday nights was sauna night, and the Finnish community, everybody took their saunas on Saturday night. went to school Monday through Friday. I went to school, kindergarten, like I said, in the Carp Lake School. I caught a school bus that stopped in front of my house, and it was about a mile to the school, back and forth. We didn't have a farm. My dad worked out, but we always planted a garden and that sort of thing. In the summer times, tended that. My dad, before the lamprey took the fish out of Lake Trout of Lake Superior, ran a charter fishing operation out of Silver City. So that was his summertime employment, and worked in the woods in the winter time.
How about you, Sally? Anything different?
My childhood was pretty much the same as Doug's. He mentioned the county or the township line, and he grew up on one side of the township line, and I grew up on the other side. So while he went to the Carp Lake schools, I went to the Otanagan schools, even though we just lived about 2 miles apart, I think. And it was the same thing. We took the school bus, but because there were so many side roads, we went up and down every side road before we got to the school. So it was quite a lengthy trip for us to get into town. And in the spring, the side roads were all broken up with the, you know, spring breakup and stuff. So we'd often have to walk from M64 home and stuff like that. And it was a close-knit community. They had picnics and different activities, and the kids got together for sledding and baseball. And because we were 5-6 miles from Otanagan, we kind of had our own little groups. And many of our mothers did not drive. So, you know, when our dads were at work, we were without transportation into town. So we did kind of depend on our green neighbors for entertainment. And like Doug said, we had, you know, had the gardens, and my family grew Christmas trees to sell. And, you know, so we were resourceful in being out in the country, being rural kids.
Okay. So one thing that obviously happened at M64 is summer residence or tourism.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts or memories about, you just mentioned your dad was a charter fisherman, so when do you think that started, that whole people buying land on the lakeshore or people coming up to resorts?
That started with Thornton Green as well. Thornton Green lived in Otanagan. He had a house on Houghton Street that at one time was the Northern Lights Bed and Breakfast. That was Thornton's home. But he built a cabin in Green, right kind of across from where Camp 2 was on the lakeshore. I think Whiteheads are the most recent owners of that property. But he built a cabin there, and he went to school at Beloit College in Beloit, Wisconsin, and he gave one of his professors there a cottage or a property on the lake to build a cottage by the Townline Creek. Over time, he then I began convincing people that this was a great place to come and vacation up here on the lakeshore. And he brought a whole bunch of people that bought cottages along the lakeshore over time. His professor Burr, his professor, was just the first of them. And that's kind of way that began. And most of the people who bought on the lakeshore were, you know, they were summer residents type of things. They were English-speaking people, kind of the south side of M64 was Finnish-speaking people. Other than the folks that he kind of enticed after World War I, when the Finns were no longer coming to the States because of the war, then he began recruiting people from, like I said, Iowa and Illinois, who were the next layer down south. As the land opened up, in Green, but yeah, that started by Green as well.
So now we know that Green did the lumbering. He then enticed people to come up and mm-hmm. and promoted farming, and now he's also promoting recreation or
yeah.
resort.
Yeah.
Different levels of clientele, though. And,
yeah, yeah.
And most of those people coming up would come by rail, I assume?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
They also, when they bought their properties up here, then they would hire the local Finnish people to look after their properties, doing cleaning and maintenance and, you know, shoveling snow or whatever. And so the Finnish were employed by these people, these lakeshore people that came
yeah.
up then.
And they purchased produce from the Finns and that sort of thing. A lot of them kept house for them, cooked for them, that sort of thing. So.
Do you remember any commercial fishing operations besides those in Ontonagon, but further along the lakeshore between there or even up to as far as Union Bay?
I don't know that there was any commercial fishing, but there was charter fishing services for tourists to go out and fish for lake trout and that sort of thing out on the lake. And there were a number of charter boats that ran out of Silver City. There may have been some in Ontonagon too. I know there were a lot of commercial fishermen that fished out of Ontonagon, but not west of there that I'm aware of.
Do you remember any of the names of the charter boats?
I don't know that much about the charter fishing. I think Earl Doyle may have written a book about some of the early fishing, a little pamphlet that
yeah.
Has more information about that. My dad's boat that he ran out of Silver City was called the Sea Prince. And another gentleman that ran out of Silver City, he had a number of boats, was Richard Westrick, Dick Westrick. So that's one name that I remember. And I do not remember the names of his boats. I could, somewhere I've got that information. In fact, I have a Facebook friend of Dick Westrick's son, who is also Dick Westrick, but he would have that information. Well, Sally reminds me, Thornton Green, when around 1907, the Macmillan sold their interest in the Macmillan Lumber Company to Wooster Lumber in out of Chassel. I think it was John Wooster was the head of that company, and it became known as, at that point in time, the Ontonagon Sama became known as the Greenwood Lumber Company, and Thornton Green was the manager of the Greenwood Lumber Company. In 1914, he retired and sold his interest out of the company and retired to Natchez, Mississippi. He bought a plantation in Natchez, and he spent...
This is 19...
1914. He bought a plantation in Natchez, kept his cottage in Green, and spent the winters in Natchez and the summers in Green. That plantation still exists. It's called Elgin Plantation. It's also, part of that plantation is also a bed and breakfast now. And we've stayed there. It's interesting. It had been a cotton plantation built in the early 1800s. After the boll weevil came through that part of the country, cotton business pretty much died, and it became a pecan plantation. They raised pecans, and Thornton Green advertised his pecans here in the Outenagan Herald for people to buy, and so he was quite the promoter.
It sounds like it. Well, anything else you'd like to add?
I we could go on for hours and hours, but this probably. When I was first contacted to do this by Fern Melilla, I think she indicated to me that she called me because she had seen I had posted a lot of stuff on Facebook about the history of Green on a group page there called Green Michigan. And she saw my name there a lot because I set up that Facebook group page several years ago and post little tidbits about Green history on there from time to time. And you can find it by just Googling Green MI 1904 Facebook or something like that, and it'll take you to the link for that Facebook page. I'm not sure you can read it if you don't use Facebook. But if you're a Facebook user, you know, it'll let you read the information there. If you join the group or like the group, you can post and comment on it as well. But it has a lot of just different bits and pieces of Green history, that tidbits that I throw on there. And buy a plantation.
And that would have been about what time period?
He bought the plantation in 1914.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when he moved to Natchez. And he wrote an article in the Herald after he bought it, and it's kind of an interesting article about life on that plantation and the main house of the plantation is, you know, where the plantation owners live. Next door to it was the house servants' quarters, and that's what's now the Airbnb, is the servants' quarters. And it was a pretty fancy house too. You know, they did all the work for the people living in the plantation. And then there's pictures also of the slaves' homes. Of course, when he bought it, they weren't slaves, but they were sharecroppers, and they were just hovels, you know, just really poor looking buildings. But so very different lifestyle than.
It's yeah. Interesting that the home he had here in Ontonagon later became a bed and breakfast place to where we've stayed.
Yeah, kind of a connection between the two lives.
Yeah.